This is Troy Wagner.
This is Eric Miller.
We are
Ravers for Recovery.
And if you're listening to this,
so are you.
How was your day?
How was your week?
We want to hear from you. Reach out to us by email, info@raversforrecovery.org. And go ahead and connect with others in recovery by joining our Facebook page. And always stay up to date with the latest news by visiting our website, www.raversforrecovery.org.
And now, join us for this week's podcast.
On this episode, I continue my autobiography. This is part two in the first half of the autobiography. I discussed how I got to Las Vegas, met my girlfriend that I had there, and how my drug use had escalated all the way up to the point where one morning I woke up and SWAT was greeting me at my front door. So on this second part, I will pick up there on Sunday, May 5th, 2013. This was the day that I was arrested for murder in the first degree. The day began by being awoken to SWAT being outside my front door. As I walked out the door, half awake and with my glasses on, I noticed a red dot on my chest, and then suddenly a guy grabbed me, handcuffed me, and threw me into a van, which took me into a building where I was interrogated by homicide detectives for 8 hours. Instead of asking for a lawyer and keeping my mouth shut, I spoke so freaking much that there were 27 pages of discovery. 27 pages of discovery. I blatantly lied to the homicide detectives and yelled and screamed. This began the longest 6 months of my entire life. I was imprisoned at Clark County Detention Center from May to November of 2013. The first 3 months I was extremely depressed and had lost all of my belongings. Lost my two puppies, Bambi and Teeny, lost my self-respect, and almost lost all hope. Even though I had all of these losses, there are a few things which I did gain in jail. I gained insight into my life and the surety that the life I had been living was not the one that I wanted to continue to live. I gained freedom from active addiction, reconnected with my higher power, and was reminded of the unconditional love that I have for my family. If it were not for this unconditional love which my family has given to me, no matter the number of faults I have, I would never have made it through this time of my life. I say unconditional because even though they found out that I had been arrested for murder and that I was an addict, and get this, they actually found out those two things on the same exact day. But even though, knowing that they still loved me and were willing to give me patience, understanding, encouragement, forgiveness, and hope when I was not even able to give those to myself. They also supported me financially by paying $50 to commissary every week for 6 months, paying for my jail phone calls, purchasing me books, and paid bail and lawyer fees of over $15,000. In November of 2013, the murder charge was dropped to voluntary manslaughter and attempted robbery, and I walked out the front doors of Clark County Detention Center and into the fresh air of freedom. I also walked into the loving embrace of my parents. The judicial system gave me 24 hours to get checked into Vitality Center Rehab in Elko, Nevada. At Vitality Center, I had my first taste of recovery. However, we mostly just watched movies, played games, And we did some step work, but shit, we got to like, what, step four? So, I was so grateful to be out of the cage which I had been living in, though. I spent a month up in Elko, Nevada, and from there I returned to Laughlin, Nevada, to live with my parents once again. So, if you remember from part one, all of the times that I had tried to move to Las Vegas, and then moved back home to Laughlin, moved to Las Vegas, moved back home to Laughlin. So here, once again, getting out of rehab, probably what, this is 5 years after my first use of meth, I'm still moving back home with my parents in Laughlin. So I was so grateful to be home, though. Even though I didn't act like it, I had nightmares and would wake up yelling. I would walk around saying that I hate myself constantly. I would question myself about how I could be so stupid. I even tried to kill myself 3 different times. Slowly, though, I did get better. In fact, I actually remember when my mom told me the first time that she heard me laugh again. I started going to church, received counseling from the pastor. His name was Pastor Will at the Laughlin Community Church. I had a requirement to check in with house arrest every Thursday, which was 90 miles away in Las Vegas, and my parents had to pay them $75 a week. I had a requirement to go to 20 outpatient substance abuse counseling sessions, which, for a crazy-ass reason, no insurance was covering me, so my parents even paid $120 an hour for 20 sessions. Each session was about an hour. I had a requirement to go to nightly Narcotics Anonymous meetings and, you know, get my paper signed. I was doing everything necessary to give me the best chance of receiving probation when I returned to court in April 2014. And then, 2 weeks before court, I even landed a full-time job as a clerk in the group sales department at the Riverside Hotel and Casino. My lawyer actually said that this was the ace in the hand. The ace in my hand, which landed me probation. The night before sentencing, my parents and I stayed up at the D Hotel in downtown Las Vegas. I was so scared, very possibly because of all of the locked up episodes that I had been watching while on house arrest at my parents'. Not a smart idea to be maybe going to prison and be watching Locked Up. Not a very good idea at all. If you have it on, turn it off now. But yeah, this was the only night in my life when I have actually had a nervous breakdown. I was crying and shaking uncontrollably. The next morning came and my parents and I met my brother, my aunt, my grandmother at the courthouse. We were as well prepared for this court case as anyone could ever be. We had several pieces of supporting material, which included letters from family and friends, a letter from my manager at the Riverside Hotel and Casino, report from the forensic psychologist, letter from my pastor, and also a letter that I wrote to the court. I had heard that when reading a letter to the judge, like at any time you're in court, that reading a letter to the judge, we should not show any emotion because if the outcome is prison, then it shows weakness to the other inmates. But even with knowing that I was not able to hold it together, even with knowing that, I was still not able to hold it together and was crying uncontrollably. I did eventually get through reading the whole letter, though. However, I was able to read through my letter to the court. My judge, whose name was Judge Tao, looked at me and said that never in the history of him being a judge had he ever given probation to someone who had the charges which I had. I am not sure if it was the impeccable job of my lawyer, me being a first-time offender, all of the supporting material that we presented to the court, to the DA and to the judge, my higher power, or a combination of them all, but Judge Chow actually told me that he was going to give me a chance. And on that day, he granted me probation. The stipulations of my probation were that I was to continue Narcotics Anonymous meetings, that I was to either work or do community service of 20 hours a week, and to check in with my probation officer. If I messed up on my probation, I would be required to serve two consecutive 2 to 10 year sentences. Consecutive. For the next 2 years, I worked as a clerk in the group sales department at the Riverside Hotel and Casino. Except for Narcotics Anonymous, I was so extremely bored in Laughlin. So I tried a couple different side jobs, such as an MLM, multi-level marketing company, named Plexus, and had started speaking to a guy about helping him build a website named Planet Sober. I was not satisfied with either of those ventures, and as time went on, I hated my job at Riverside Hotel and Casino more and more. I knew I had to make a change, but I was so scared because I remember the hell that I had been through the last time that I was in Las Vegas. While in Laughlin, I started listening to electronic dance music once again. This was the music which I had once loved so much. Listening to that music made me miss being in Vegas even more. I decided that I was going to return to Las Vegas and rebuild my business, Nocturnal Vegas VIP. However, when I searched for the domain name, nocturnalvegasvip.com, it said that it was not available and that a company in Germany owned it now and wanted $6,000 for it. I said, screw that. So I just dropped the VIP and bought the domain nocturnalvegas.com, which GoDaddy actually said would be easier for SEO, which is a search engine optimization, and easier for people to remember. I also had a friend redesign the logo that I had originally used. While I was still living in Laughlin, one weekend I went into Las Vegas to see if I was able to find an apartment which rented to felons, but unfortunately I was not able to find one. I absolutely loved being back in Las Vegas again. Yes, I was back in Las Vegas again. While I was there, I ran into one of my old using buddies, who was then also clean, but he said that his dad was sick and that if his dad passed away, then he was going to use again. I was happy that we were both now clean, but sad about what he had told me about his dad. I hated returning to Laughlin, but knew that I had to because I had to be back at work. A few weeks later, I almost lost my dad. One day, he was driving to come pick me up from work, and he passed out while the car was going 45 miles an hour. And he crossed over into the oncoming lanes, which fortunately did not have any traffic. Another very fortunate thing was that there was a police officer right behind him, and that officer was able to immediately call an ambulance. Oh, that was a scary time. The outcome was that my dad had to have a double bypass surgery. All of us were so grateful that our higher power saved his life, just like we were grateful that our higher power had kept me out of prison. And actually, I was told by one of my family members that it was probably all of the stress that I had caused him, which caused him to have this heart attack. And then another one of my family members kind of reassured me that it might not be that, it might be the 40 years of smoking cigarettes. So yeah, I know in NA or in recovery we smoke a lot of cigarettes, but we should not do that because that is also a drug, and also a drug that kills. After a few more months had gone by, I just could not stand living in Laughlin anymore. And so I put my 2 weeks in at the Riverside Hotel and Casino. I was not off probation yet, even though I had racked up a lot of good time for working full-time for 2 years. My family wanted me to stay in Laughlin until I was at least off of probation. But I knew that I would be able to do community service until off of probation, My friend Robert knew a friend that had a room available in the house which he was living in, so everything was working out, so I thought. I did feel horrible about the money that my family had spent on getting me out of the trouble I was in and all of the stress I had caused them. Caused my dad to have that, to have that heart attack. But I was selfish. I was very, very, very selfish, and I only wanted to be again back in Las Vegas. My dad had one wish if I was to return to Las Vegas, and that was to never, never, ever use again. By August 2016, I had my Nocturnal Vegas website built, had a vehicle, money and savings, a place to live, and contacts to get back into the nightlife industry. Shortly after moving back to Las Vegas, I began my community service at Las Vegas Rescue Mission. The first month, I was doing 16 hours a week, until later I found out that I really only needed to do 16 hours a month. Yeah, they were all laughing at me there. But hey, I just did extra community service. It was probably good for me. And this also shows how careful I was being. I even went through a program named Hope for Prisoners, which helps anyone with a criminal background gain employment. That program was very paramount in getting me on the track of wanting to better myself. I started listening to a lot of inspirational and motivational speakers and podcasts on Spotify. One thing that I did not do through Hope for Prisoners, though, was gain employment through them. Yeah, I stopped going to the program. I actually met a girl that I was going through the program with, and we started going out to nightclubs again, probably because of my loneliness. Yeah. And I knew I had Nocturnal Vegas. I knew how to make money with that, and that it was good money, and that I really, really enjoyed it. Most of the positions that Hope for Prisoners also land people in are positions that are hourly and kind of low pay. So I knew that I had the job that I wanted to do, which was promoting adult venues and bottle service and all of that. And the job that I really had moved back to Las Vegas to do. As months went by, everything was going well, and during the day, I was either working on my website or I was doing community service. Every night, I would head to the Strip to either host clients at nightclubs or speak to new prospective clients to try and get them to go to one of the many strip clubs in Sin City. I even began driving Uber. That was incredible. I had a new car. It was a Nissan Altima Bose stereo system, nice dark tint, leather interior, sunroof, and I was driving Uber, a job that I really, really loved. I was so grateful that Uber approved me to drive for them, especially since I did have the two felonies, and knowing that Lyft had denied me due to that reason. I was making great money, about $6,000 to $8,000 a month. This was actually shorter than I usually think it was, because my mind wants to think of the time, of the good times, of the good things that happened and not the bad things that happened. So I don't know, that's just how my mind works. But I was also taking care of my legal obligations, and I was happy again. During June of 2017, I was even working with Buzz Pop Cocktails, helping the company find promo models for Electric Daisy Carnival. Electric Daisy Carnival, if you're not familiar with that, I went to the first one at the Los Angeles Coliseum, and then by this time it had moved to Las Vegas. The first one in Las Vegas, I believe, was in 2013. Yeah, but Electric Daisy Carnival is an electronic dance music festival which takes place every summer and has an attendance of around 400,000 people. So it's insane. It's awesome. Yes, there are clean and sober tents there, and I will get into that more later. In July of 2017, my parents and I drove up to Cheyenne, Wyoming to go to a family reunion and also to celebrate my grandmother's 100th birthday. I loved spending time with them again and also seeing my family up in Wyoming. July of 2017 was also the time that I was finally able to get off of probation and put my history where it belongs, in the past. Well, actually, now that I look at that, so I thought. But upon returning back home to Las Vegas from that vacation, I went to parole and probation for the last time. A week later, after getting off of probation, yes, I did relapse. I ran into a friend that I had once used with before, and he asked me if I wanted to smoke or do a line, and immediately I said no, of course not. I was tired though, so he said, what if he just puts a little into a drink? And I said sure, and I got a boost of energy, one that I had missed for way too long. Also, feelings. Everything felt great. I hate it. You know, because it does. It does feel great. Everything did feel great. The tingling sensation in your head, the energy, all of that, you know, masks what it really is. That devilish drug that brings you to your knees every time. The next day, I bought some meth, and I was hooked again. I made friends with different people in different social circles. Most of us never hung out together, but whoever it was that I was hanging out with at the time, we always made sure we had the drugs there. I would go to nightclubs and after hours with Gabriella, buy drugs, and go to after hours with Amy, a different Amy, not my ex. I would use at home with a guy named Robert, not the first Robert that I had lived with, a different Robert, also with a guy named Drew, Terry, Nick. You know, sorry if I am using your names and you don't want me to, but I am not using any last names just for this reason. I even had one of my roommates, Taylor, using with me after he had been clean for 16 years. I felt really, really, really horrible about that. I did love the promiscuous lifestyle, though, and partied with a few girls, and even three girls that I had met while driving Uber I hooked up with. I felt like I was living the high life. One of my favorite memories was going to Electric Daisy Carnival 2018, and I had bought the VIP tickets. Even though during Electric Daisy Carnival 2018 I was high on meth, Molly, and weed, I loved the feeling that I had, and I even wrote an article for my friend's website, Vegas Valley News, which had over 500 views. Later in September of 2018, I went to the Life is Beautiful Music Festival and was high there as well. I do have to say, though, that during Electric Daisy Carnival 2018, there was a lot of stupid shit that I was very lucky that I never got in trouble with. We actually had a condo in town called Mesquite, which is on the other side of the Las Vegas Motor Speedway from Las Vegas. And after the festival was over, each night I was stupid. I was up though, you know, and I would give Uber rides into Las Vegas 30 minutes, probably longer than that, because you know the traffic that there is during Electric Daisy Carnival. But yeah, like, party all night, 6 a.m., drive people into Las Vegas. I would even pick up some more drugs from the girl I was getting them from, and then drive all the way back to Mesquite to our condo and sleep maybe like an hour or two if I even slept at all, and then went back to Electric Daisy Carnival. And yeah, that was really stupid. One incredibly stupid thing that I did was drive up the exit ramp to try and get onto the highway. Stupid shit that we do. But yeah, I would be lying if I said that I was not loving my life at that time, though, you know, because there were a lot of good times, but there were many, many, many bad times as well. But I was making really good money. I was writing articles which were being viewed. by Vegas Valley News and, you know, their viewers. I was driving for Uber, which I absolutely loved. I was able to go to Electric Daisy Carnival with that VIP status. Was able to drink and be high at the same time. And make money. And talk to girls, hook up with girls. I continued to use it every single day. You know, it was like part of my daily routine, a daily chore. So in July of 2018, while I was driving some Uber passengers, I came up to a red light, but did not come to a complete stop. I was turning right and there was no traffic. So I did what was called a California stop. There was an officer behind me, so immediately he switched his lights on and I pulled over. As soon as the officer came up to my window, I said to the officer, "Is this really, really fucking necessary? I'm driving Uber. I have two passengers that I'm taking to their destination." Yeah, he didn't like that so much. So the officer did not like that I had that attitude with them, and also that I was cussing at him. I was handcuffed. The passengers had to get out and walk the rest of the way, which I was also actually really pissed about because they were from Houston. They didn't know Vegas. The cops made them get out in a part of the town that they didn't know at all. Didn't even call them another Uber car to come pick them up. So yeah, that was their bad. You know, that was really bad that they had them do that. So yeah, my car was actually towed though, and I was taken to jail. A few hours after that, I was able to get out of jail on my own recognizance. I was pissed at the entire situation and decided to go see the lawyer who had helped me out years before, Mike Ason. I wanted to freaking sue Metro Police for making a wrongful arrest. I was insane. I was crazy. Mike advised me that it was best to leave the situation alone and that I did not want to bring more attention upon myself. I say that I regrettably agreed. Maybe at the time I regretted it, but God, I'm so thankful that I actually did listen to his advice. Damn, I'm glad that I listened to his advice. But yeah, July 10th, 2018, Uber blocked me from getting onto their platform, either due to them having a new CEO and the new regulations as far as felons being able to work for them, or due to the traffic stop that I had. It was ridiculous though that I was blocked because I did have many 5-star ratings. I did have many comments left by passengers saying that I was a great driver, in a great car, that they really loved all of it. But I was still blocked. So go figure. After that, I contacted Uber for 2 months trying to get them to reactivate my account. They never did. And this made me extremely depressed because I loved driving for them. I was able to have decent conversations with people and make better connections than just being a strip club street promoter. I was forced to only be that street promoter though, which I hated, and this led to me using more and drinking more. But now it looks like, you know, one of the only options that I have is going back to Vegas and doing that. But yeah, I'll discuss that in a different episode. Slow season then came and business slowed way down. November to February of 2019 in Las Vegas was some of the worst weather I've ever seen in Las Vegas. Frigid, windy nights, and even snow. I tried to do the best I could to get clients, but in January of 2019, I had received 3 tickets in the last 6 months, was 2 months behind on car payments, was behind on rent, and I really did have no hope in sight. You know, like one night I made $100, what did I do? I went to go gamble that, trying to make more money, lost it all. I did try to drive for DoorDash, but that money was pretty freaking horrible as well. While driving around for DoorDash, and also a lot of times when I got home from working on the strip, I would listen to recovery podcasts. One particular was Angela Pugh's Addiction Unlimited. which I actually recently got to speak to her, and that was really cool. I emailed another one of these speakers, and they suggested that I get the hell out of Sin City. The combination of the podcast and his advice led me to really start thinking if I did want to stay. About a week later, I emailed my aunt, the one here in Cheyenne, Wyoming. She responded the same day, saying that I had an open invitation if I wanted to leave Vegas and come stay with her for a while in Cheyenne, Wyoming, to work on my recovery. That week, I bought my last bag of meth, began packing up my belongings, and also posted Nocturnal Vegas for sale. That week was incredibly, incredibly, incredibly hard. To leave that town that I had worked so hard to get back to, leave that business that I had worked so hard to rebuild. But meth will take it from you every single time. Meth will fucking take it from you. In recovery, many of us must change our surroundings to give ourselves a fair chance of building a new life and avoiding relapse. Trust me, I have firsthand knowledge of this. I first got clean in 2013, but a few years later, after returning to the same people, places, and things, I had a relapse in 2017. Luckily, in 2019, I began listening to motivational speakers, music, and podcasts, which eventually led me back to recovery. I'd like to end this by saying that, hello, my name is Troy Wagoner, and I am a Texas native. I am a high school graduate. I am a college graduate with an associate's degree. I am a college graduate with a bachelor's degree. I am a lover instead of a fighter. I am a very loving friend. I am a son. I am a nephew. I am a brother. I am an uncle. I am an addict in recovery, and I am an addict for recovery. If you did listen to my autobiography, thank you very much. I hope that it helped you in some way. Just don't use. Just even for one day. I've been having a lot of negative feelings lately. And the feelings of, that I don't like my life. Very ungrateful feelings. Feelings wanting to be back in Vegas again. Even after these 6 times of not making it there, or however many times. Everything happens for a reason. I feel that I am doing this episode with my autobiography at exactly the right time. It's making me realize that I am exactly where I need to be. And, I hope that you are where you need to be. I hope that you know that it is a pure sign of strength to reach out and ask for help. You can do this. You got this. You can do this. Even if I don't know you, I love you. Going through the same struggle, we will all make it. And thank you again for listening. I want to go ahead and end this podcast actually with letting you know a little bit about my first year of recovery this time. So my last day using was February 24th, 2019. It was when I was in Las Vegas. I did have the 3 traffic tickets that I had racked up in the final 6 months while I was there in Las Vegas. My parents actually had to end up paying those off for me. I did leave Las Vegas with only 2 months rent to my landlord, and my car payment was 2 months past due as well. So it was time for me to get out of Las Vegas. Part of my recovery was selling the website that I had worked so hard to build up, the LLC, the trademark Nocturnal Vegas LLC. February 2019, I did move out of Las Vegas, Nevada, and I spent a week actually in Bullhead City, Arizona, at those rooms of recovery. Had to go to my first meeting that I had been to in a long time. Had to stand up and collect a white key tag. If you've been there, you know just how difficult this is to do. If you haven't been there and you're thinking of going back to a meeting to do it, I did it. Several people have done it. You can go back to the meeting, stand up, collect your white key tag, get your road of recovery going once more. Also, March 3rd, I moved actually to Cheyenne, Wyoming to be with my aunt and started going to meetings here in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Really built a firm foundation for recovery here. Went to 90 meetings in 90 days. I think it was, well, actually probably about 87 meetings in 90 days. You know, I enrolled in intense outpatient. I started chairing a meeting, took a service position. Went to my first convention, recovery convention, that was in Evanston, Wyoming, May of 2019. A big part of my recovery has been making the Just For Today candy bracelets. You know, being a true raver at heart, I didn't know how people would react to these bracelets, but so far so good. I've made about 100 of them so far. I started building the Ravers for Recovery website and podcast. The convention that I went to in Everson was called the Upper Rocky Mountain Region of NA. I chair the Anchors Away meeting. One fun thing I did over the summer was play soccer with the Cheyenne Adult Cheyenne Recreation League. Also in July, I went to Estes Park with my mom, my dad, my brother, and my niece. I did lose my car in April, and that was due to the ice here in Cheyenne, Wyoming. There was some black ice. Did not stop well on that, and accidentally ran into the car in front of me. Progressive team deemed that as a total loss. So, you know, even if we are in recovery, things still happen. Life still happens. Being in recovery, though, we are able to take care of it a lot better than when we are in our active addiction. I got back into theater. I ushered at a lot of the shows here at the Atlas Theater in Cheyenne, also with the Cheyenne Children's Theater. I even did Foley on stage for a live radio show that was at the Atlas Theater. I did some work as a DoorDash delivery driver. I went to a concert in Denver called Recovery. A couple of recovery rappers and singers were there, including Kolichi, Rim One, and Joe Nestor. I got back in touch with nature, went up to Yellowstone in September, paid off some cards and some taxes, paid off Capital One credit card, paid off 2018 taxes. Went to the in a convention in Denver, Colorado. That was really awesome. There were 650 people in attendance, and I believe it was over 1 million hours of clean time, something like that. Or over 1 million days of clean time, maybe even. I got my student loans out of default status and back on track. Went up to Boston to visit my sister, brother-in-law, niece, and nephew. And coming back, I had a 10-hour layover in Baltimore. So I actually jumped on an Amtrak to Washington, D.C., which I have never been to. And that day was my 9-month anniversary as well. So I was able to get my 9-month anniversary at a meeting in our nation's capital, which was really, really, really awesome. I finished off 2019 working as a UPS seasonal helper. Went to go visit my parents and my brother in Laughlin, Nevada for Christmas. Ended the year with an NA New Year's Eve party and watching the ball drop in Cheyenne, Wyoming with fireworks. I'd say it was a great first year of recovery. You have been listening to another episode of the Ravers for Recovery podcast. I am Troy Wagner.
I'm Eric Miller.
And we are Ravers for Recovery. And if you listen to this, you are too. Go ahead and join the Facebook group, which is growing quickly. You'll find that with keyword Ravers for Recovery. Also, make sure to check out the website. A lot of cool info on there. That's at raversforrecovery.org. Until next time, again, we are Ravers for Recovery.